Welcome to the Swim Swim Breakdown. As always, I'm your host, Coleman Hodges, coming to you from Austin, Texas. We are joined by senior international reporter Loretta Race from Kentucky and Yin-Yin Lee from Madison, New Jersey, who just finished taking five AP tests.
Oh my gosh. I don't envy you.
My brain is fried, but at least I'm done. So
yes,
there's that.
Congrats.
And now you get to talk about your favorite subject, swimming.
Yeah, yeah. From biology to swimming. Great transition.
Seriously, from life to aquatic life. And so the big news on everyone's radar this week is the Atlanta Classic, where, among others, Caleb Dressel will make his debut first meet since making an early departure from the 2022 World Championships. Summer McIntosh will also be swimming there, even though she's swimming sort of pseudo off events for her. Katie Ledecky will be there. Bobby Fink just got released. Kate Douglas will be there. So we've got, it is a stacked field that is heading to Atlanta this weekend. From your perspective, Yin-Yin, I want to start with you. Who do you think is going to surprise us with their performances the most?
I've got to go with Kate Douglas, last minute addition. I think she's one of the most anticipated, unproven long course swimmers, because I think people like Leah Marchand, Summer McIntosh are also anticipated, but we know what they can do in long course. We know what they're capable of. But with Kate Douglas, there was even a discussion about this last week, like in the feature article I wrote about her, about like what her long course potential is. We truly don't know. She's coming off such a great NCAA career, and this is her first official meet back in the big pool after 2 months or so of training full-time long course. And I'm not really expecting anything super eye-popping, but we know she goes pretty fast in season, so I wouldn't be surprised to see if she swam a time that maybe like we weren't expecting out of her.
Another swimmer that you mentioned, Summer McIntosh. I think that for me, even though she's not swimming like, okay, 4 a.m., her breast within the 4 a.m., her world record, like made me think her 110 seed time is going to totally bite the dust. I'm not saying she's going to do like 104 or something totally crazy, but I think, you know, just seeing her kind of, you know, focus, if you will, just for the weekend on like some quasi off events, I think is really going to put some, you know, big goggles on. It's like, holy heck, you know, she can do like a 108 or 107, 100 breast that, you know, maybe we weren't. I mean, I guess you can't even say expecting, because she can do anything. Honestly, she's proven it. So it's, you know, it's pretty much just what is she going to do this weekend? It's just going to be a matter of which event. And I'm particularly looking at the 100 breast for her. I was really surprised when I looked at the Canadian rankings that 110 is just 13th of all the Canadian, you know, swimmers. I mean, I just feel like the 13th fastest Canadian shouldn't be faster than 110. So I think for that reason alone, I think she's going to just break into the top 10 Canadians ever. And I think she'll get under 110 for sure. So I'm looking for that.
I mean, Canadian breaststroke is historically weak, so I'm not super surprised about that.
I know, just a 110 is like double digit. Mm. I don't know. For me, it was a little eye-opening. So, but bottom line, I'm looking for that.
Yeah.
To combine your answers, I'm really excited for the 100 fly, where we'll hopefully get to see Kate Douglas and Summer McIntosh go head-to-head, which isn't a battle that we might normally see on an international stage, but like when two juggernauts like that get to race, especially in that, and I mean, they might meet in the 200 IM later this year at World Champs.
At least, maybe not at Worlds with the conflict, but definitely at the Olympics.
I really hope Kate sticks with that event as she did last summer.
She's locked in for the event. When I talked to her last in March, she had that breakout swim, and she's committed to the event. So yeah, I'm really excited about that too.
I wish I could say I think Caleb Dressel will surprise us, but I don't think he will. He's not traditionally an insanely fast in season swimmer. You know, he's coming from Florida and the Greg Troy, Anthony Nesty mindset of putting a lot of work in and then, you know, really tapering down for the big meet when it counts. And no matter what he what events he ends up swimming. I think he'll throw down solid times, but I don't think he would go to a meet before he's ready to compete at a level that he's happy with, and to without knowing that he's going to be able to put up, you know, a sub a 22 low at least in the 50 free, or a 48 high, maybe even, you know, I think he'll break 49 in the 100 free. I don't think he would come to a meet without being able, having the confidence that he'll throw down times like that. But, you know, I think we would really love to see like a 47.5. And I just don't think we're going to get that at this juncture in the season, which pains me.
Oh,
I mean, I know this is a boring answer, but I'm not really expecting anything from him. I'm just happy to see that he's back competing, because as you said, he's not traditionally a fast in-season swimmer, and he's coming off of almost a year of not swimming competitively. So even if he doesn't break 49, I don't think it says anything about him and where he is with his career. I think it's already impressive enough, or just great enough, that he's actively swimming at a meet, training every day, and just getting back in shape. And that's honestly, I'm honestly just looking forward to seeing him swim regardless of how fast he does it.
Yeah, I think even if he scratches, you know, half his events, I think just the fact that he's getting wet is, you know, a good sign that he's comfortable where he's at. So I think that's great. I totally agree with you.
Okay, yeah, yay Caleb, he's getting back in the water. Sigh. Yeah. I do think that his Florida training mate, Josh Liendo, after having a great Canadian trials, he's gone back to Gainesville. He's put in some real long course work. I think he'll have a similar performance to Summer McIntosh. You know, Summer went to Canadian trials and just lit it up. He's swimming his own events, so I don't think he'll be at the times he was at trials, but I think he'll put up in-season times that will kind of make us say, okay, he's still very, he's really looking to contend for medals in three events in Fukuoka this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Chinese nationals were last week. A few highlights: Zheng Yufei was 56.4 in the 100 fly, Panzan Li 47.2 in the 100 free, 144 in the 200 free. I'm curious if we think that the Chinese, and Loretta, I think you can give us a few more highlights, or just the highlights from what you saw of this, but also if you think that they can hold form into world championships, because these are podium worthy times, even if they just repeat them, especially because it will be a home continent championships.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, Chinese swimmers do on the whole swim faster on their home soil. So I think the fact that, you know, they had Chinese Spring Nationals in March, and then they also obviously had this meet as well. And so I feel like they carried the momentum even just from March to now. So I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that they'll still be kind of on their game, you know, later on this summer. Panzan Li was hands down for me the eye-opener, because is 47.200 free was fast in itself. I mean, that's a humongously fast time. But before that, he was, I think, 47.6. So he dropped me, you know, just under half a second, which for him is phenomenal. And then he also was a 144 in the 200 free as well. So he's definitely one to keep his eye on, only 18 years old. So that's terrific. Zheng Yufei is traditionally fast. I mean, obviously Olympic silver medalist, 100 fly. She's been 55. She was already 56 earlier in the 100 fly. So her being fast wasn't as much of a surprise, because she was kind of just in her, you know, modus operandi in terms of the 100 fly at any rate. And she also took a few other events. But for me also, the men's Zhu Xiaoyu, the Rio backstroke Olympic silver medalist, or was it the champion? Now I'm trying to think. Definitely a medalist, gold or silver in the 100 back.
Medalist, yeah.
I think, yeah. So, yeah. So he was 52.26 in his 100 back. I mean, that's number one in the world right now. So for me, I'm questioning, like, not that it was a fluke, but, you know, was it kind of like a standout swim in his standout swim of 2023? Or is he going to kind of, you know, keep chipping away at the world's field that has a little bit surpassed him, you know, since Rio. So I'm really going to keep my eye on him in particular. And then Li Bingji also tied her Asian continental record in the 400 free. She was 401. So that's, again, setting up this momentous field of, you know, Titmus, McIntosh, you know, Ledecky, Li Bingji, you know, there's even Fairweather in New Zealand. I mean, it's almost like the men's distance. It's getting a little bit tighter, you know, to get on the podium. So that was another exciting effort that we got to see over the Chinese Nationals as well.
Yeah, and adding on to what Loretta said, I think it's important to remember that this was China's first major long course meet that didn't feel like it was affected by COVID, because it seems like for the last 2 years, there were so many Chinese nationals meets, WOGS, which was in China, supposed to be hosted in China, the Asian Games, they were all being postponed or canceled because of COVID, and a lot of their training situations were impacted by that. And I do think that's part of the reason why the Chinese were a little bit lackluster at Worlds. And this is a point that I've brought up in the past, but COVID really affected them. And for the first time in a while, that obstacle wasn't there. So, I mean, I could see that possibly being a reason why as to why there's this uptick in fast times at Chinese Nationals. And yes, they do go faster on their home soil traditionally just because of how important Nationals is to them as a meet, but also think about how well they performed at the Olympics. I can totally see that a lot of them replicating or even improving their performances at Worlds and maybe possibly the Asian Games as well. The Asian Games are in China this year, right?
Yeah.
In their home pool in China, in their home continent at Worlds. And just overall, I think this is, a meet is a good sign. I wouldn't be surprised to see them replicate the same times.
Interesting. I don't see it happening for some of them. I don't think Pan Zhongli is going to swim quite as fast at Worlds as he did.
I can still see him going 47 low or mid and meddling. Maybe he might not drop the same amount of time that he did at Chinese Nationals, but I can totally see him swimming a similar time.
I don't see him going faster than 47.4 at Worlds. The last time China had a world champ in the 100 free was Ning Zitao in 2015, and he was 47.8 to win in a very tight field, and he had no pressure on him, right? Like, he had no one thought he was going to win that race. He beat out Cam McAvoy, among others, who was the heavy favorite at that time. Whereas, you know, going into this now, he is very much on the radar, and I think he's going to feel that pressure. And you know, if he makes a world champ final, I believe this will be his first. And so that, I think that'll be more of a learning experience for him. He's only 18, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in there with fellow 18-year-olds, you know, or teenagers, you know, David Popovich, Huang Sun-woo, you know, the guys that have been there already, and have done it, along with the obvious veterans. I mean, whoever ends up making the team from the U.S. hopefully makes a final. You know, I can't really say with certainty who that's going to be yet. But I think Zhang Yufei is going to swim fast, you know, at Worlds. I think Li Bingji is going to do really well. Go ahead.
I mean, but Pan, he finished fourth last year at Worlds. He just missed the podium. It's not like this is his first time swimming an international meet. He's been there before, and yeah, there's going to be more pressure on him, but it's not like he's totally new to this.
I think
we're underestimating his mental capabilities right now.
I don't think we know enough about him.
I mean, honestly.
So you're right. I did not realize this. He was 47.7, 8/100ths away from bronze last year in the 100 free and world champs. I did not realize that. So he's been in a final. He hasn't had the pressure though. And I think this will be a good learning experience for him heading into Paris. I think this will set him up well. I see him maybe meddling, but I don't see him replicating that. I think if he goes 47-2 at Worlds, he'll win.
Yeah,
but I don't I think that's going to happen.
That sounds like a gold medal winning time, and I don't
know. You think David Popovich is going to add 0.3 from his world record swim? Is that what you're saying?
I think 47-2 wins.
I don't think that's wow. out of the realm of possibility whatsoever.
I mean, I could see it happening, but I feel like if that happens, people will be disappointed.
I agree.
I mean, that's crazy, but still.
But
people will be disappointed.
David swam his world record in Italy, you know, home continent. He's very comfortable swimming there. That's a really fast pool. This is in Japan. And I think that makes a difference.
I mean, even when he was in Budapest, he was 47-1. Yeah,
still Europe. You know,
I don't think you're going to win this
home continent advantage a thing now? We've brought it up twice already in this episode.
To me, it very much is. I mean, Romania and Hungary are not that far apart.
I guess with time zones, it's an advantage, but I don't really see how it's an advantage in any other way.
Well, I mean, I think time zone makes a big difference, you know, especially when you're talking about the west to east, as in like Europe or North America to Asia. You know, I think that's a pretty start, or like Australia. I just think that's a difference. But I don't think China will show out quite as much. But I do think their stars will do really well in their home continent this summer in Japan. Next up, we hit on WUGS, and I'm curious, there's a lot of potential qualifications going on at US trials at the end of June. I'm curious which meet is the most desirable for a US athlete in your eyes, aside from world championships. Obviously, we've got the U23 European championships. We've got World University Games, which is not necessarily a qualification meet so much as a volunteer. We've got Pan American Games, which is happening later in the year in Chile. And we've got World Junior Championships. Obviously, have to be a junior to qualify for those. But if you were a swimmer that was eligible for one or more of these meets, which would you find the most desirable and why? Go ahead.
So first of all, WUGS is out of the question because you have to pay out of pocket to go for that. I don't remember how much, but it was in the thousands, and that's just not really appealing. It feels like pay to play, and that's just not something you should be doing.
Happens in a lot of other countries for like South Africa World Championships, that to pay most of their way. So happens a lot of other places.
Yeah. But I'm going to have to go with World Juniors just because it feels like, assuming you're eligible for all four, it feels like the only meet where everyone is going to be there. It's if you're 18 and under, you're going to be against the world's best 18 and under swimmers. But then with Pan Ams, you're pretty much secluded to North and South American countries. And really, the only powerhouses there are the U.S. and Canada, and maybe the Brazilian men, but that's it. U23 Euros, that meet is a little bit intriguing to me, but I'm still not really sure how many swimmers are going to be at that meet. I think in the U.S. trial selection procedure, World Juniors takes precedent. When is U23 Worlds? Do you know?
It's end of August, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It's in August.
And to give some context, World Junior Championships is in Netanya, Israel. U23 Euro Champs in Dublin. World University Games, Chengdu, China. And Pan Ams, Chile.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Yanni. Now that you mentioned that they're both around the same time, I can see a lot of people picking to go to World Juniors over U23 Euros because it's just, in terms of junior swimmers, it's a greater competition field, more international. The meet has been there for longer, so it's like a more established meet. And so just if I was a swimmer that was able to go to all four, I would go to World Juniors because I think I would have the greatest amount of competition there.
See, I'm kind of going, I kind of went back and forth, but I landed on the U23 championships because it's new, it's inaugural. I mean, this is the first time it's ever happening. So I think it's just that allure, I think is fresh and shiny and new. And I think that adds a little bit more, excitement to it. And it's almost like World Juniors, but bigger in a way, because it's 23 and under. And it's not just European nations. They open it up to any
Oh, I
non-LEN,
forgot about
federation.
that.
Yeah. So it's pretty much like a bigger World Juniors, at least for this edition of it. So I think that, if I were a swimmer, I'd be like, heck yeah, bring on even more competition and kind of more, just prestigiousness, of the event. And I think also Dublin is kind of a good time zone. It kind of meets the east and the west. So I think that's, kind of beneficial for the majority of swimmers that may be going there. And we already know like Ireland's Daniel Whiffen. I mean, it's not just up and comers or budding star. I mean, he's a European record holder. I mean, he's just one example of somebody who's going to be there. And obviously it's in his home nation, but I think the caliber of talent, and we got, British, Great Britain released their roster and there's some good talent on there as well. So I think for me, it would be the U23, specifically just because it's the first one and it's non-just European this time around.
I changed my mind. I agree with Loretta. I completely forgot about the whole you don't have to be from Europe to swim there. And considering that we're talking about US athletes and what meet they should go to, I probably should have known that. Anyways.
Well, but Yin, and you brought up some good points. I mean, to Loretta's point, this is the inaugural meet of it. But to your point, like World Junior Champs, it's an established meet. You kind of know what you're getting a little bit more. I think I would actually go with the World University Games. I'm biased just because I talked to their coaches and their director of swimming recently. So I just have more general information about the meet and what it's going to look like. I think A, you do have to pay your own way, but they're looking for funding. But they're also, if I'm going to that meet, that means I really want to go to that meet. And I think you're going to be bought in pretty much from the get-go because you're paying your own way. So there's a little more motivation in that regard. World University Games, I think, is one of the, if not the biggest international sporting event outside of the Olympics. And so, like, it is a games. You do have a village and you do have a lot of different sports from all over the, every country, every sport, basically. And so, in that regard, it's just a pretty unique experience.
True.
And I think the team, again, the team will all be pretty motivated to perform and to represent the USA, given that they are there by choice and they weren't selected, but they want to be there and they'll be hungry to prove themselves and to medal for USA. So I think that will be a really unique environment because every other team is selected. It's like you kind of earn your spot through the selection process. But and here it's kind of like, well, I have a spot, but you want to prove that you are deserving of it. And so I think there will be a little more hunger there and a little more fire to really represent the USA. So, and who knows that, this is a unique situation in that we usually do send a WUGS team. So who knows the next time we don't send one. So one of a kind experience, from my perspective on that one.
WOGS is exciting in a sense where a lot of these swimmers that are on the WOGS team, you don't they might not get a chance to represent the US through qualification. Just meets that you have to qualify for. So it's cool to see them put on a USA cap and compete for medals at a big international meet. There's a lot of D2, D3 mid-major swimmers on lineup, and I just think it's cool that they're getting this opportunity, even if it's
Well, they're
pay
paying.
your own
I
way
feel
there.
like it can kind of put some swimmers at a disadvantage, though, having to pay your own way, because you could say that about any D2 or D3 athlete, and they just don't happen to have that same amount of money in their pocket right now. So I feel like that's almost like, you know, puts a spotlight on the disadvantages of having a non-funded team in a way. It's, you know, you just happen to have the ability financially to go. So I don't know. And I mean, to your point, I was going to say
college sports in general, because D2, D3, there's no scholarships. So they're paying their way to swim in college as well.
I was just going to say, to Coleman's point earlier, I would hope that any Team USA swimmer that gets selected is hungry for a medal, no matter which competition, if it's voluntary or if they get, you know, funded. So I would hope they're all hungry for a medal.
I would hope so too. I feel like there's been instances in the past, I don't know, decade, and you know, obviously this is the minority, but there are people who are like, oh, I made the team, and then, you know, kind of settle for that, or feel like they're, you know, that's the pinnacle, that's the goal, mm-hmm. rather than meddling, which is a great accomplishment. And speaking of making the team, I mean, just thinking about the USA's international competition schedule and the lead up to the 2024 Olympic trials, like, man, oh man, is this going to be really cool? We're going to see so many athletes on display, because we will have world champs, WUGs, world junior champs, U23 Euro champs, Pan Ams, and then 2024 world champs in early February, and Pan Ams being, I think, in October. So it's like, we're not going to go 2 months without seeing the U.S. compete internationally, and it's all going to be different rosters. So we're going to see so many athletes highlighted, all leading towards Olympic trials, that it's going to be pretty cool. A lot of international experience and a lot of chances for spotlights, and to kind of throw their name in the hats of like, hey, maybe I can make this Olympic team. That is our news for the week. So now let's move on and play a little Sink or Swim. First up today on Sink or Swim, we had an article about it, so let's just say yay or nay. Are we in a golden age of men's distance swimming?
Absolutely. For the first time in a while, I legitimately don't know who's going to be on the podium in the men's 1500, 800 free, because there's just so many different options. Because even in past years when it's been pretty competitive, it was really just Paul Trinieri, Welbrock, Romanchuk, and then Fink came along. But now there's just so many different swimmers that can finish top three. Because it's like, you've got Paul Trinieri, Fink, Welbrock, Romanchuk, Lucas Martins, Daniel Wiffen, who broke out recently, Lorenzo Galassi, who is also on a meteoric rise, and it's just, there's so many different factors, and there's so many different swimmers in this race that can contend for medals, and they all have very different race strategies, with Fink doing his last 25, Gregorio opening really fast, and I just think it's going to be really, really exciting two races, and I hope they don't cut to commercials during it.
So are you, so you're swimming that it is the golden age?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because I'm actually sinking it, because I'm not saying it's not a golden, it's not the golden age. I'm saying it's a golden age. But I feel like this event is cyclical. Like, I feel like I was looking at past world record holders, and I mean, we had Grant Hackett, who held 1500 world record for over 10 years. And we actually, Swim Stats just, you know, tweeted out that, I know it's the 400, but Ian Thorpe was the first, you know, person to three-peat the 400 free at world championships. Like, so there's been, you know, huge dominating forces at Kieran Perkins. I mean, I'm just naming Australians, but yeah, there's like a multitude of people in the 1500, but I feel like this is just another kind of like rise, and then it's kind of going to trickle down a little bit, and then there's going to be another rise. So I think it's a golden age, but I don't think it's necessarily the golden age. And Welbrock's going to do, probably, I would assume, open water at the Olympics. You know, we don't even know who's going to be, maybe even G-Palt's going to do, you know, open water in addition to pool swim. We don't know. So I I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of variables, and I think it's a golden age, but not the golden age.
My favorite comment on this article was, the golden age will come next year when Shining Sun's suspension ends. Which
I'm not counting anything out.
Which, as a commenter aptly pointed out, even before he got suspended, he had basically dropped out of the 1500 at any kind of world championships level.
Yeah.
So he was pretty much mid distance all the way, even before his suspension. I mean, as long as I've been following swimming, I'm swimming it. I'd say so. This is the deepest a men's 1500 or 800 field has been. And I think that goes back a long way, because even when, you know, there were guys vying to break 15 minutes, like there was only one or two or maybe three. And it wasn't so deep as it is now. I mean, we've got at least four or five guys who could break 14:35, but you know, get under 14:30. I mean,
but we're still talking about two people that are under 14:35 right now. So we have Whiffen and Welbrack, who are 14:34, and then the rest of the field, if I'm not mistaken, are 14:40. So it's not like,
yeah, Greg.
Yeah, so it's not like they're, you know, tenths of a second behind one another. I mean, I'm saying it's still a very deep field, but it's not like we have a dozen guys who are right now within like a second of one another. So there's still kind of like two upper cusp, you know, and then a thicker field behind them.
I mean, but it's also distance swimming, where a 1 second difference is smaller than it is in a 100 or a 200. And you think about how the performances of these swimmers fluctuate. Just because a swimmer went 14:34 now doesn't mean they're going to go 14:34 at Worlds. You saw with Greg, he was 14:32 at Worlds last year, and then at Euros we all thought he was the heavy favorite to win, but he added like 9.7 seconds, and Romanchuk beat him, even though Romanchuk didn't beat his best time. I don't think it comes down to what their times are right now.
I think just the fact that the field is so deep, I don't feel like it's ever been this close, even if it is a 5 second spread on their best times. You've never had five guys in a mile, and you're all like, they could win. which to me, golden age. Next up, Rex Maurer had the flu, and then he had his flu meet, where he broke a national high school record in the 500 free, 412.7. Now that he has recovered from the flu, and he's gone a best time in the 200 freestyle at that same meet, do you think this week at the CIF Championships, he will drop another national high school record?
I'm going to soft swim it, because if he breaks the national high school record, I won't be surprised. But then if he doesn't break a record, I'm not going to be like, oh, this is such a disappointment, because, you know, people can add from time to time. And when you're looking at Maurer's times, it's probably going to be either the 500 free, which I think is easier for him to break, because he just has to go his best time and he can break it. Because
just the best time.
No, I mean, but he didn't go a best time last week, and he broke the national high school record.
Right.
And then in the 200 free, which I think it's possible, but not necessarily as likely as the 500. He's 133.5 in the 200. The national high school record is a 132.8 by Aaron Shackle. And if he swam 133.5 with the flu and 412.7 with the flu, I can totally see him going 132 high, 412 low, maybe 411, which I think would be crazy for a high schooler. But if he also doesn't do it and doesn't go as fast as he did at the Division I championships last week, like, I won't be disappointed either.
I'm going to swim it as well. Mine's kind of a straightforward swim. I think you know, being hopefully more towards 100%. He's probably still not 100%, but the fact that he was still within a second of the 200 free high school record, I think bodes very well for him to you know, at least get closer. I'm going to say swim it in the sense that I think he'll break the 200 free record. So he has a 500 under his belt. So now he wants to get after that 200. So I'm swimming it.
I'm going to sink it. I don't I think that he was in bed for like 3 or 4 days straight.
Well, you interviewed him. So you
I did. You could have watched, should have watched my interview. you know, when you're sick, you take better care of yourself than when you're not sick. And that in itself is not a taper, but it is rest. It's literal rest, right? And so he wouldn't have rested. He wouldn't have taken care of himself like that had he not been sick. So I think he was in fairly good form for that 500 free and for that 200 free. I think this week, having another week of training, even though it wasn't like super intense training, like he's still swimming. I think he'll be just off the times that he went at the CIF Southern Section meet. I will say that I think Loyola is going to avenge their meet. They lost at that meet to Santa Margarita by 3 points.
Ugh, that's tough.
I think they're coming in as the defending champions from last year to the CIF championship meet. I think they're going to defend their title. I think Rex, as a team captain, will take that burden on his shoulders. He's going to be a great scorer for them. The thing is, he doesn't have to go best times to win his events in the 200 and 500 free. You know, it's not like he has like a ton of competition in those. And so I think he'll do what he needs to do to help his team win. But I think he will be just slightly slower than his flu game performance. Carson Foster has gone pro. He is no longer competing in the NCAA. He will still be training at Texas through this summer. I'm guessing through next summer. He signed with Mizuno through 2028. So he's swimming somewhere for the next 5 years, which is pretty exciting for us as swim fans. I am curious. I need you to look into your NCAA crystal ball all the way to next year. Texas men were third this year after coming in seeded to be like, I don't know, like ninth or something. Do you think that they can stay in the top four next year with the rise of ASU, Florida, and NC State?
I'm going to sink it. I didn't think they were in good shape even with Foster, because they're losing Jake Foster, Peter Larson, Danny Krieger, and potentially Casper Corbeau, who as of a few weeks ago was undecided about taking a fifth year. And Texas already has issues with sprinting, and they're losing one of their core sprinters, at least one.
Wait, potentially isn't that like all of them? If they lose Krieger, Peter, and Casper.
No, literally all of them except for Luke Hobson, who's apparently right. A sprinter now.
Right.
Yeah, and so just losing arguably one of their best swimmers, if not their best swimmer, is just an even bigger blow. And when you look at the results from last year, Cal and ASU were well ahead of Texas. Indiana, who, even though they lose Van Mathias, they're gaining Ahmed Hafnawi, who is going to be a big deal for them. They only lost to Texas by 5 points. NC State was 10 points behind Texas. Actually, Texas, Indiana, NC State, and Florida were only separated by... They were separated by less than 20... They were separated by 16 points.
Holy.
And I think Indiana, NC State, and Florida are losing less people than Texas. Florida's gaining a massive recruit in Scotty Buff. And they're just in better shape than Texas. And with Foster, that just makes it even worse for them. So I see them finishing outside the top four.
Yeah, I'm along with Union for sure. I definitely took a look at last year's standings, took a look at the roster, and things just... I mean, they're not looking bad, but it's just like there's like regular Texas and then there's like next year's Texas and it doesn't look so good. So I'm going to sink it. I don't think they're going to finish in the top four either.
I totally forgot to mention Indiana, who had a great, their men had a great showing in NCs as well. I feel like Florida, even though they were in that top six, they kind of were off at NCAAs. Aside, even though they broke like, or they won three NCAA relays, I feel like their individual swim, like, I think they lost points on the psych sheet. Which is pretty wild. So like, I feel like they're going to come back next year and be better. Because I don't think they're losing a ton of points. And so I think I don't see it. I'm sinking it as well. I think Texas is just losing a lot and they are bringing in a great class, but I don't question their ability to develop, but you know, you can't bet a lot on freshmen. And so I think with what they will have, combined with what they're bringing in, I don't think it's going to equate in a top four finish for Texas. And last but not least, Ryan White announced that she will be moving to NC State. This comes after her graduation, as well as the announcement that who we know is her primary coach is taking the head coaching position for the men at SMU. So what do you think? Will Ryan White make her way back onto the World Champs team this summer after the move to Raleigh?
I'm going to sink it for two reasons. One, she's already had a pretty tumultuous year with everything that's going on at Alabama. She didn't have a great NCs, and I do think getting out of that situation, getting out of that training environment, especially with Ozzy leaving and going to SMU, is the good move for her. But I just don't think she's gonna adjust in time for trials. But the second reason, which is probably the bigger reason why as to why I don't think she's gonna make the world's team, is because she largely benefited off of Reagan Smith's underperformance last year, and I think the more we see Reagan swim, the more it's clear that she's back. She's not going to let what happened to her last year in an Olympic trials happen to her again. Phoebe Bacon's been pretty consistent and looks in better shape than Ryan White. And I think those two are just going to get the top two spots and the two back over Ryan White. And with the one back, it's even more competitive because you've got Berkoff, Curzan, Reagan Smith, and all those factors. Like, she can be around her best times and still miss the team. So I think it's more so that the U.S. women's backstroke field is so competitive. Reagan is back, and yeah, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm thinking it as well for your exact same reason about Reagan Smith. I think that it's not that she was just lackluster, I guess you would say. And so I think that, yeah, it definitely opened the door a couple doors for additional teammates. And I think, you know, Ryan White was one of them. Not to say that she's not a tremendous swimmer in her own right, but I think that paired with adjusting to a new training environment doesn't put all the check boxes in her favor. So I think just for that reason, I would probably sink it for this time around.
Yeah, I'm totally with you guys. I'm going to sink it. I hope getting a new training environment rejuvenates her. And, you know, NC State's obviously on a roll. She'll be training with Catherine Berkoff, who will be one of her aforementioned competitors at these world trials. But yeah, her last two NCAA seasons were not her best. And obviously, you know, she came off of last year's NCAAs to make the world championship team, which was kind of a surprise to me. So whatever was going on with her short course, you know, she was able to get on the team. She won a bronze medal last year in Budapest in the two back. She won a gold medal as a prelim swimmer in the 400 medley relay. She led off in prelims in 001. And so, you know, time-wise, it didn't seem like a great meet for her. She won bronze in the two back at 2:06.9. Which is slower than what she went to make the team. But you know, she walked away with that meet from two medals. And then, yeah, again, this year, NCAA is just what time wise was not her best. And so I think it would be a lot to ask or to expect her to not only move to a new training location, move to a new coach, completely new environment, and then in 2 months, month and a half, make a team, especially with the reemergence of Reagan Smith. I think Phoebe Bacon's still going to be there. I think freaking Claire Curzan might decide to swim the 200 back, as well as the 100 and the 50. You know, she might just forego butterfly altogether.
Yeah. With her red shirt year, I'm interested in seeing how she's going to improve in long course.
Yeah. I, you know, it's a scary time to be a female backstroker in America. Those events are tight. So yeah, I got to sync that as well. So that's the Swim Swam breakdown. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in. I don't know. I can't say every week. We haven't been doing the breakdown every week. The commenters have noticed, but this is your week's news in swimming. Hopefully we'll be back next week for a breakdown as well.